Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey y'all, I'm Donna.
And I'm Carrie.
And we are Paranormal Chicks.
Episode 373.
Okay, so y'all know I made fun of Carrie for having to get a CPAP and all the things. But I've been super tired and, well, we didn't think about this at the time. But then Carrie was like, Donna, because remember I had that gas leak? And she was like, that could have been some of your tiredness.
Yeah.
Because... You said, yeah, you're the one who said it.
Well, I'm just saying, yeah, it could be.
It really could, because I was super tired. And I was telling Callie, my old coworker, because like sometimes I would just like want to power down. And she's like, you were so tired out of like nowhere. But I'm like, can't keep my eyes open. And like when I was telling her about the gas leak, she was like, oh, I bet that's why you were so tired. I was like, that's what Carrie said. Anyway, it's better, but it's still like, I'm just tired. So Carrie hooked me up with her, what are they even called? Sleep doctors? And mm-hmm. I don't know, like, their big word. Do they have one?
A sleepologist? I don't know.
So he went to high school with us, okay? So I go in there, and we're kind of talking, and he's like, so what made you, like, want to come in here, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, well, Carrie said I probably have sleep apnea.
I knew you did some shit like that.
And so then a little bit later, we were just kind of talking and he's like, my insurance does the at-home test and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, and then you'll come get fitted. And depending on, you know, what works best for you, what you like, blah, blah, blah. And he said, now... don't get something just because Carrie got it and she said it's her favorite, okay? Like, you have to do it for you. And I was like, yeah, you know a lot about us then, because that is something yes. I would totally do. Okay,
yeah, that's something you would do, but I would say, this one worked for me. I didn't like this one. This is why. This is the one yeah. Kobe uses. This is the one my brother-in-law uses. This is the one my mom uses. Like, I would tell you all that. I would not say.
Absolutely. But he's just, but like, it's totally something I would do. Like, no, Carrie likes this one. I'll just do that. But we were talking about, like, I'm a stomach sleeper, and he said that, you know, a lot of people who have sleep apnea will be stomach sleepers because it's just easier, and it, like, usually, like, kind of, in their minds, like, helps with it or whatever. I was like, I did not know that, but...
good to know.
Yeah. So, I'm probably gonna have the old pappers myself.
You've needed it since... circa 2003.
Yeah, well, when I was in the hospital, you know, fighting for my life, the pulmonary...
respiratory therapist?
Yes, that. See, I knew they had a big name, but what's the sleep doctor's name? Anyway, she came in to do a test or whatever and, like, put the machine on me to see, because I was snoring, but then she never, like, came back or anything. So I was like, guess I passed that test.
She tested you or she...
like, she put it on me.
Oh, she just put the thing on you.
Yeah. And then it was only for that one night and then never again. So I was like, oh, maybe I didn't need it. I have no fucking clue.
Also, most of them are pulmonologists that are like the sleep doctors.
Oh, okay. Well, this bitch says it like she told me that.
No, I'm saying just, I'm telling you.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Girl.
Y'all, we have to talk about Patreoners because, look, Texas represented this time because I've got Aubrey B. from Texas.
I've got Justine P. from Texas.
And I've got Nikki, well, I don't know your last name, from Texas.
And I have Sarah B. from Nevada.
But Sarah B. from NV.
Oh, yeah.
That's literally how I read it off to you from the internet.
Okay. But here's the thing. Carrie doesn't do phonetic stuff or like, what is it when it's like B as in boy? And so we all know that her owl, aisle, and owl all sound alike. So she said Sarah B. from NV. And I was like, okay, was that an NV, Nevada? And she said, whatever NV is.
Because you all know I don't know abbreviations.
Well, I can't fucking understand what you're saying. N as in Nancy? Like, I don't fucking know.
Well, Foxtrot, Tango, Charlie.
Thank you.
I was trying to do what the fuck.
Yeah, no, that's a whiskey. Whiskey, Tango, Foxtrot.
Oh, why am I the way I am?
Case in point.
Well, anywhoosits, if you want some more of our shenanigans, like an extra episode a week, plus a backlog to end all backlogs, head on over to patreon.com/theAPC podcast.
And y'all know we get personal on here, but we take it to a whole nother level on Patreon.
Mm-hmm. And if you join Patreon too, you get access to the Discord server, a secret Facebook group that's not so secret, and, well, you know, more of us.
And thank you letters and stickers and all the things.
All kinds of shiz.
Not jizz, though.
Maybe on the weekends. So you know how you've been, like, big mad at me the past two episodes because I've done two unsolved ones?
Oh, did you do another one?
Well, you go first this week, so that's not my segue. I picked three stories to do. All three of them were fucking unsolved.
What the actual
And
fuck?
I was like, oh, I can't do this one.
See, that's where you could say Whiskey Tango Foxtrot.
And then I would go to the next one, like, from the recommendations and the emails, because I went to the very beginning. And I was like, ooh, let me look at that one. No, fuck, it's unsolved. And then I didn't. I mean, three times, and they were unsolved. So you're welcome that I didn't do an unsolved one.
Oh, thanks. But for real, thanks.
Colby had to work the night shift, so, like, right now we're recording and he's at work. And he did go to bed last night, because it's, like, a night shift in the middle of the week. So he came to bed a little while after I did last night, and y'all, it was a damn storm. And I'm telling you, every single time either one of us would, like, drift off to sleep, Maisie would bark at the fucking thunder. It was like the rage of just, I'm talking as soon as you had that little drop off where you're like, sleep. Nope. Bark. So I got to get her some, like, CBD or something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, Jack's too, because he was hiding in the bathtub when Colby came. Like, literally, he gets in a safe place.
Yeah.
He literally was hiding in the bathtub when Colby came to bed. And then he came to bed with us and hid in front of the shower in our bathroom all night. Also, really quick, before we get into the stories, we have to talk again about us going to New Orleans, because I feel like we need to shout this from the rooftop because y'all need to come.
Yes, please, please, please.
I think there's like maybe another month and a half or so to be able to book your room at the special rate.
Yeah. You don't have to book that hotel that we're doing, but it does have a lower rate. But we also just love hanging out in like the lobby and everything. If you've ever been to a festival with us, you know, like, our little after party is usually in a lobby or something of the hotel that we're staying.
The plan is we're going to be there July 25th through the 27th. Friday, we have a walking ghost tour, crime haunted thing.
But it is like more true crime.
Yes. Saturday, we're going to go to the Museum of Death and then just do some fun things at the hotel Saturday afternoon. And then Saturday evening, we're going to do a live show. And then that's really it. Sunday, I think I said last time we talked about it, this Sunday was the live show, but it's Saturday. I'm a dodo bird. And then Sunday, you know, everybody just can kind of hang out and depart when you want to depart or stay more days. Or, you know, some people are coming in early to like experience New Orleans. Some people are going to stay a little bit longer. Really and truly, whatever you want to do.
Yeah. And you don't have to be with us the entire time, or you could be. doesn't matter. You know, like, we want you to be there, but you don't have to be like, oh, well, I have to go with them. No, if you want to go see something, you go see it. Hell, you tell us about it. We might all be like, can we go?
For real. We're like, can I come in your backpack? So if y'all want to get in on that, like, we're not charging for the live show or anything like that. It's just like, you really just got to get yourself there, pay for your hotel. And if you want to do the, whatever it's called, like the tours and the Museum of Death, like, you have to, you're responsible for that. But so y'all come.
Please, please, please. Who am I? Sabrina Carpenter? I keep saying, please, please, please.
I do love espresso.
Oh, me too.
Before we get into Donna's story, we have to talk about BetterHelp because this episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. All right, we love talking about ghosts and true crime, but you know what's even scarier than a haunted house? Real life.
For real. Like, life can be a lot. Life is lifing. And we all joke about needing therapy after researching some of these cases, but really, taking care of your mental health is just as important as taking care of your physical health.
And I used to think that therapy was this big, overwhelming thing. Like, it was always about when you had this huge crisis or this childhood trauma or something like that that you had to deal with. So you had to go to this place and sit on a couch and talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. And, you know, that's not really my thing. And, you know, sometimes it's not that big.
But therapy isn't just about the crisis moments. It is about having the tools to handle life, big and small. And the best part is, it doesn't have to cost an arm and a leg. Traditional in-person therapy can run you hundreds of dollars per session. Who has that money? But with BetterHelp, you can save up to 50% per session.
Plus, it's all online, so you can do it from your couch, your car, or even a haunted house. But, like, if you're doing it in your car, can you not drive, please?
Yeah, that seems like a bad idea.
BetterHelp makes therapy accessible. You pay a flat fee for weekly sessions, which means there's no surprise costs. You get matched with a therapist who fits your needs. And if it's not a great match, you can switch, no problem.
Carrie and I have both seen and felt how much therapy can make a difference in your life.
So if you've been thinking about therapy, you have to try BetterHelp. It has over 30,000 therapists that have already helped over 5 million people, which means there's a good chance that they've got someone who will fit you and what you want.
And your well-being is worth it. You are worth it.
So go to betterhelp.com/APC to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/APC.
Seriously, take care of yourself, and if your therapist happened to enjoy ghost stories and true crime, even better.
Okay, we're taking it back old school. Not as old school as I have been doing. I don't know why I had to go up that high, but picture it. South Africa, 1917. We're in the Mooi River in Natal. This is where we meet 7-year-old Elizabeth Clarer and her sister Barbara, who is 9, and they were playing in the stables. They were feeding some new puppies that their father had gotten, and I'm just like, you had me at feeding puppies. Love that, because puppies, kittens, little chicks, anything baby in pet form, I'm there for.
No truer words, in pet form.
Uh-huh. But nothing out of the ordinary for them. Until something sliced through the sky. Not a bird, not a plane. It was a silver disc glowing with a pearly sheen, gliding silently above the hilltop, the landscape. And then Elizabeth said that right after they saw that, and they're like, whoa, what the fuck was that? There was a massive orangish red object, kind of like a miniature moon, that was floating in the atmosphere. And it seemed like that silver disc they saw seemed to be guiding the larger object away, and there was smoke trailing behind it. It was strange. It was something that mesmerized the kids, especially Elizabeth. But that was just the beginning. From that moment, she wasn't just a little girl living on a farm. She was a girl with her eyes glued to the stars, both figuratively and eventually quite literally. So let's talk more about Elizabeth and find out who she was. So Elizabeth Clarer was born Elizabeth Woollott in 1910. She was the youngest daughter of Samuel Bancroft Woollott and Florence Woollott. Now, Samuel Bancroft, he went by S.B. He was a veterinary. Is that how you say it?
Veterinarian?
No, like he was a veterinary surgeon? Questions? He wasn't a veterinarian. He was a veterinary surgeon, is what they said.
What? How could you be the surgeon without being the doctor?
I don't know. I mean, like, he was a veterinarian, but, like, he was a veterinary surgeon. That was his specialty.
They all?
Fuck if I know.
Okay, continue.
I don't know. This is what it said in all the things. Then he was also a successful farmer. And because men always have so many hobbies, he also became a dedicated polo player and was really good and, like, started teaching people, like, younger kids and stuff, how to do it. I'm like, my God, typical man have all these fucking things.
And they are so motherfucking expensive. Hunting, fishing,
living golfing, every day.
Golfing. So expensive.
Now, Elizabeth got it from her daddy. She had ambition. She had dedication. And I'm not saying her mama Florence wasn't anything. I'm just saying her daddy had a lot of shit, like a lot of irons in the fire. Is that the thing? Irons in the pot.
Irons in the fire.
Oh, irons in the fire. Why are phrases so hard for me?
I'm really not quite sure.
I don't know either. I don't want to be Rose in our group, but sometimes I really feel like I am.
Yeah, you are. And you used to be the smart one.
Well, I don't think I was ever that, but apparently Elizabeth could play instruments, like orchestra instruments to like masterful levels. And so she studied music in Florence. Then she went to Cambridge University and studied meteorology because, again, she loved everything with the sky, with the weather, all the things. And then she wanted to be part of the sky, so she learned to fly planes. So during World War II, she served in the Royal Air Force's Intelligence Division. She would decode enemy communications.
I am.
Mm-hmm. And since she was, you know, ambitious and all, she was like, I can do all of this and find a man. And she did. She found love, married a man who was also in the military and a test pilot. Now, there was a report that she and her then husband like saw some kind of UFO together when they were up doing like a flight test run. I don't know, whatever. But I couldn't find it in every, I don't really know about that, but there's a documentary with Elizabeth and she mentioned that. But the next big part of Elizabeth's story comes in 1954. There were some reports from a local Zulu community about mysterious lights in the sky. And when Elizabeth heard this, she was just kind of at a point where she wanted something different. She wanted to pursue her like dreams and stuff, not just working. And so she returned to her family's land. Now, people were calling this a lightning bird. It was described as a glowing presence in the sky that wasn't quite bird, but wasn't quite fully like a machine. And that comes from like kind of like a cryptid in the Zulu communities. It was sometimes a bad omen. All the, you know, like it was just like one of those things. Like everyone knew what a lightning bird represented. And she was very intrigued because kind of brought her back to what her and her husband had seen, and then also what she had seen as a kid there. So on December 27th of that year, Elizabeth climbed up a small hill near her farmhouse, one that she would later dub the Flying Saucer Hill. And according to her, that is when it happened. There was a silver UFO, like a little starship, that descended from the clouds, and it hovered just a few meters above the ground. It was silent, it was smooth, and it was like nothing from this world. Now, there were three portholes that she could see on the side of the ship, and through one of those portholes, she claimed to have seen a man. He was tall, blonde, and humanoid. Like, he didn't look like what you would think an alien was supposed to look like, you know, green, big eyes, all the things. He was like a tall, hot blonde. And she wasn't just staring at him. He was staring back at her. But that's when the air grew thick with heat, with tension, and it was like there was this invisible barrier that kept her at a distance. And before she knew what was happening, the ship then ascended and vanished. Real quick, I do want to go back to the first time with her and her sister Barbara seeing it, and with that like red flame moon thing that she saw after it. People had said that it was probably like a meteor, but what she said that she has come to believe is that that was a meteor, but like why the UFO showed up was to try to like guide it to not hit Earth and like not have severe damage and stuff. So she was like, they were protecting us. And that's kind of how she always looked at it. So that's just like foreshadowing the foreskin there. But 2 years later, on April 7th, 1956, Elizabeth returned to that same hill, you know, Flying Saucer Hill. And this time, she wasn't just an observer. According to her, the ship came back down and she was invited aboard it. Like, she wasn't abducted, like, you know, where the light beams down and she's like, oh. What she was introduced to that blonde humanoid figure, and his name was Akon. And no, not like the smack that, da, 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 not that Akon.
There, you have a lot happening right here from your great value aerial that you did.
I know.
And your Akon. I don't know what's happening with you.
Okay. Me either. But she met Akon. He's like, hey, you want to see my ship? And she's like, yeah. Even though I would have shipped my pants. Get it?
I got it. Patty Jo.
But Akon went on to explain that he came from the planet Meton, I think it is. It's M-E-T-O-N. And that orbited Proxima Centauri. And that's
what I thought.
Uh-huh. And that's our nearest neighboring star, according to him. And he wasn't alone. Like, when he went on the ship, he introduced her to another person. And he was darker skinned, a stockier man. And Akon said that he was a botanist and an astrophysicist. I can't even say the word. Astrophysicist. Elizabeth remarked how it wasn't what she thought of like a UFO would be. Like, she thought it would be sterile and like very minimalistic, very futuristic. And the inside of this ship was like a floating garden. You know, it wasn't like the blinking lights that you saw from Hollywood. It was warm. It was soft. It was organic. There were no sharp edges. You know, it had all this natural light. And she said it was so silent. Like, there was just a gentle hum, but you didn't really feel like you were moving. I want to say it was kind of like a cruise ship, but, you know, sometimes on the cruise ship, you can feel that you're moving. But other times you're like, oh, shit, yeah, we're just like in the middle of the ocean.
Right.
And that's what it was. Like, she's like, oh, fuck, yeah, like, we're not on ground. This is not like a hotel. This is me in this, like, UFO. Elizabeth also described that in the floor, like, there was, like, a porthole through the floor, like a window, and you could see Earth beneath them. And she said that she just remembers seeing it, and then it's like everyone was ants, basically. You know, like, they got further and further away, and she ended up having a full panoramic view of the planet. So then he kind of like toured her around, you know, like whatever aliens do. He didn't probe her, I guess. But she came back and she thought maybe that would be that, you know. However, it wasn't a one-time visit. Elizabeth later claimed that she had multiple visits with Akon and that over time, their relationship deepened.
No.
So during some encounters, they did kiss.
No.
Uh-huh. And Akon revealed that Elizabeth was like his soulmate, reincarnated. It's like we've been together in so many lifetimes. And of course, I found you. Like I found you before, but you were too young and all of this stuff. And so it was like she was a reincarnated Venusian, like from Venus. Venusian? I don't know.
That is giving me, spoiler alert if you've never seen Twilight, that is giving me the last movie when the wolf guy, you thought that he like was really in love with the main girl, Kristen Stewart, but you find out that really it was like her kid that he imprinted on, and you see like with the kid when it's a young kid and you're like, that is fucking creepy as shit. Who wrote that?
Yeah. It kind of gave me shit. What was the time traveler's wife or something where he came and saw her when she was little and like he'd like come back naked. And so he would hide in the bushes and stuff. But then she like started bringing him clothes and all the things. And then like he found her when she was in college and then they got together. But it's like very weird that you met her at such a young age. And so that just reminded me of that. Like, hey, I was coming, like I found you in this life, but you were too young. So I had to wait.
Yes, that is so creepy.
Yeah. So he then also, to make it a little bit more creepy, he explained how his kind would occasionally take Earth women as partners because their babies, like mixing with the Venusians or whatever, it strengthened their race and like, you know, had new blood and all the things. So they were in love. They were trying to start a family, all this stuff. And Elizabeth said that their friendship slowly morphed into a cosmic union of souls.
I have secondhand embarrassment.
During a romantic rendezvous on a
with Star Command?
Yes.
Star Command, come in, Charlie, or whatever the fuck Buzz Lightyear says.
So that rendezvous was on like a plateau near Catkin Peak, and this was April 1958. Elizabeth said it went beyond kissing and they consummated their bond. Now, again, this wasn't like him probing her, like memory wipes or anything like we've heard aliens, you know, but this was like a passionate love affair, like notebook worthy, you know.
I'm sure it was.
All the things. And Akon gave her a silver ring that like enhance their telepathic communication. So it was like an engagement ring, but from outer space. And I've been reading all these fucking books, you know, like ACOTAR and stuff. And so like, they always have like this bond, like a mating bond. And that's what I can just picture with the rings is that like, they would be able to like feel each other if they were in danger or sad or whatever.
Can we get back to you saying, I've been reading all these books? What books?
ACOTAR.
When?
I've talked about this.
How long ago? I didn't know you were reading books.
Yeah, audiobooks.
Okay.
You don't think that's the same as reading?
No.
Why?
I don't know. If you asked me this tomorrow, I would say yes, it's the same. But it's not like reading.
I've been listening to books.
There you go.
Oh, God. She says I'm the technical person over here. Technically. Meanwhile, she'll be like, oh, I was reading this book. And it was on her fucking library hoopla or whatever it's called that it's an audiobook. Anyway, now we have another layer to add to this alien love affair cake. This is the cherry on top. She became pregnant.
I'm sorry. What?
Yeah. So in 1959, she said that she was taken aboard the craft one more time. And also her MG car, which I think was just like a really fast car. But I'm like, what was it? Like a ferry that you just like drove up with your car on it? You know what I mean? Like they lowered down like the, like a toll bridge and you just like up in there. I don't know. But she was transported to Metan, or however you say it, Akon's home planet. According to her, that place was a utopia. You know, everyone lived in harmony with nature. There was no pollution, no war, no greed. Everything was powered by free energy.
So why do they come here?
I mean, maybe because Earth Girls are easy. Isn't that a movie?
I don't know, but it's not wrong.
But they said that, like, the buildings were made of, like, crystal-like materials, and everyone communicated telepathically, and they were all just so peaceful. The weather was perfect, the food was grown naturally, and there was always, like, a hint of music in the air. She said that the planet's atmosphere, though, it was, like, a higher vibration than Earth, and that the frequencies would affect human physiology, particularly the heart. So Elizabeth knew that she couldn't live there. As much as she wanted, she couldn't live there. But she did give birth to their son, Ailing, on Metan, the planet. He was part human and part Venetian. Venusian? I don't know how to say it, but, you know, from Venus. She described him as incredibly intelligent, gentle, and advanced for his age. But again, with the vibrations and everything, it was too intense for her heart to take because, you know, she was just a mere human, not half alien and stuff. So she had to leave.
Her baby behind?
Uh-huh. So she was sent back to Earth, and Ailing remained on Metan, or people said it so many different ways because...
Well, it's not real.
Not real?
So, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, I don't know which one it is, but yeah. But he remained there to be educated in the ways of their people, and Elizabeth never saw him again.
What? So her lover just left and she never got to see her baby again? The fuck?
Mm-hmm.
He got what he wanted. An earthling baby.
Right. So back on Earth, she lived her life the best she could, and soon she started to share her story. And in 1980, she published a book called Beyond the Light Barrier, and that's where she recounted her experiences, the encounters, her cosmic romance with Akon. And it was different than other people had ever claimed it had been before because, you know, I've covered a lot of abductions and it's usually like scary, traumatic, you know.
Probed.
Yeah. I mean, she was probed, but not against her will.
It was like double mint fun.
But hers was basically like a love story, you know, across galaxies and all of this. But because of this, many people were skeptical.
Duh.
Because it's like, okay, so you had a child with a humanoid alien.
But there's no proof of it.
Yeah, and all you have is this, like, silver ring that you say is from, you know, your alien lover. But, like, we don't know what powers it has because it doesn't work for us. You know what I mean? It's just, like, a silver ring. But even though she had the skeptics coming after her, she had a lot of supporters. And she ended up speaking at international UFO conferences, and she would, like, receive standing ovations because she always talked about how she feels like she was brought there and she got these experiences to help people on Earth be more, like, at peace and stuff. And, like, this is how we should be living, not having pollution and, you know... Like, we're destroying the planet. We shouldn't destroy the planet. Some people said that she fabricated this whole story. Like, you didn't have a baby. You didn't, you know, get abducted. You didn't do all of these things. Because Also, she had some proof because she took some pictures and it was called like a brownie camera. It was like one of those old box camera. And she would take pictures of it. And there were like 7 good shots that she got that weren't like super blurry or anything. But people said it looked like she had a hubcap that she threw in the air. So yes, it was silver. Yes, it was disc-like. But was it actually flying through the air or was it like...
yeeted.
Yes. That was a very wet yeet.
You know.
But then other people were like, she was so frail and fragile. There's no way that she would have the brownie camera ready to take the picture and throw the hubcap up in the air. And I'm like, but I mean, she could have had a partner in crime. Like,
yeah, the love of her life.
Yeah. I mean, because if I said, Carrie, I want you to throw this hubcap up in the air, I'm going to take a picture. She'd be like, this is fucking dumb, but okay.
Right. Like, yes.
Okay.
I mean, like, how far do you want me to throw it? Like, do you want me to do it like Frisbee or you want me to, like, how do you want me to do it? But like, this is the dumbest shit you've ever had me do. But like, how do you want me to do
it? Yes. Like, you would do it. And I'd be like, oh, this is an art project. She'd be like, oh, okay. One of your hyperfixations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Elizabeth Clare passed away in 1994, but she never recanted any part of her story. Like, up until her death, she insisted that everything she said was true, that she had been loved by an alien. You know, she had birthed a child on another planet and had been shown, you know, peaceful, advanced civilization. So people kind of thought of her as a prophet or...
oh, Lord.
Yeah, because it was like, this is what we could be, like, and I could lead you into that kind of thing.
Did she have human kids?
She did.
Yeah. So I was going to say, how does she say she had the kid? Because could we just be like, well, your cervix has never been dilated. We can tell, you know?
Yeah.
But if she had biological, like, human kids.
Yeah.
Not alien kids, then we couldn't do that.
Yeah, they didn't talk a lot about them. But then I did read somewhere that she had kids. Like, I think with her first husband. And then I think she had a second husband, too. But the love of her life was out of this world, and it was the most romantic and bizarre alien encounter stories I've ever come upon. And so I had to share Elizabeth's story with y'all.
But here's the thing. Were her kids incredibly bullied then, I feel like? And also, why are we not calling this what this is? A delusion.
I mean, some people did say it. You know what it kind of reminds me of, though? Abducted in Plain Sight. Where he made that whole thing up about them being aliens and having to, like, procreate to save the world and all of that.
I do not remember that being in Abducted in Plain Sight.
Yes, that's how he got her. Like, he was like, don't tell anyone because Zulu and Wulu, like, came over the intercom of his van and stuff.
Yeah,
and was like,
yeah.
You're
yeah.
this, I'm that. Like, we're secretly this.
Yeah. Okay.
And so he was like, Earth is going to die if we don't procreate. So you can't say anything. And so she didn't.
That's right.
Like, that's what I kind of feel like happened here is that who knows what she saw, what she did. But like, if someone did take advantage of her.
Yes.
And then like, even if she did have a kid and then they took the kid, you know, for whatever reason or. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I really feel like she was taken advantage of or something.
Yeah.
But it's so hard with stuff like this because I was just going to say, but like she had kids at some point in this time of her being abducted and all the things, you know, the timeline, like when she's like, they went up to, you know, like planet Meton or whatever. And had, you know, like, whatever, we're frolicking in the gardens and all the shit. But it's like, you were there for, like, weeks. And, like, even with her kid, like, she saw him grow up some. So, like, how is it? But then you can argue that time moves faster there than it does here. Because that's on all, like, scientific movies and stuff. It's like...
yeah, on a fucking movie, though. I mean, that's like...
but I'm saying, like, people, like, we don't know about space, really. But we will say that, like, if you're up in the space thing, it ages you.
Yes, but it ages you more because of the, like, gravity shit, I feel like, than...
It does, but I'm just saying, like, it's hard to have a rebuttal because it's like, they can just use things that we have been told because we don't know.
Yeah, I could be totally off the mark and it could be real, or it could be a fucking delusion.
Yeah, I mean, I do feel like it was a delusion, and then someone preyed upon her with that delusion.
I feel like this is going to make somebody mad, but not to like bash religion, but I feel like people do that with the creation story. It's like, oh, it was 7 days at the beginning of the Bible. And then they're like, well, you don't know how long 7 days actually was back then when you bring in like dinosaurs and stuff, you know? And so I just feel like it's like 7 days to God could be a million years to us. You know what I mean?
And it, I literally used to make that argument when people would bring that up.
Yes. And so that's what it feels like. My story is a recommendation in the email. I literally went back all the way in the email to the very first line of defense. Just kidding. The first like rounds of recommendations. So this recommendation is from 2019.
Holy shit.
And it's from Carrie R. Spelled differently. So this is Across the Pond. More specifically, we are going to Tolshunt, Darcy, Essex. That's a mouthful. And we are talking about the White House farm murders.
I think I've done those.
No way. There's literally no way. I looked it up.
No, it was a Red Barn murder.
Like, I would remember this if you had done this. Okay, so this farm is owned by Neville and June Bamber. It's like a 300-acre farm, though some things I saw said 400-acre farm in Essex. Now, this is going to be one of those stories that it's quite a large story. There's definitely going to be things that are left out. There's definitely going to be things that it's like, this said this, this said this. Like, this is such a huge story that there's so many things out. The Guardian was a big old thing that I used for this because there was so many articles about that. And then the New Yorker. But Neville and June were pretty, well, more so June, pretty devout Christians. And they were well known in their area. They were unable to have biological kids, so they adopted a daughter named Sheila and a son named Jeremy. Now, there's like documentaries and stuff that go, some go like really into detail about Jeremy and Sheila's upbringing, but I think that the two of them were kind of like, he fancied himself a bit of a bad boy, and I think Sheila was trying to kind of find her footing. Because again, June was pretty religious, and I think Sheila and Jeremy really tried to push the boundaries with like how they were raised. June had some issues with mental illness. Apparently, she had been hospitalized before with depression, paranoia, and some things talk about that she really started to become like very religious to where it was almost like an obsession, like a fixation. I can't think of the word I'm trying to say, but that's what we're going with. The New Yorker talks about how June called Sheila the devil's child because she was like, she would lay out naked and she was like flirting with boys, blah, 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 blah.
Okay, wait. I know why I thought we did this, but it's a Netflix thing.
Well, and Killer Queens did it too. And I know you like really love Killer Queens.
Yeah.
But they did it a long time ago, like in 2019. But yes, there's like this document. There's a bunch on this. But when Sheila was 17, she had moved to London. She was trying to be a model. She met a guy. And by all accounts, the life that they had set up for them was Sheila was to like get married, have kids, whereas Jeremy was to like stay with the farm and like inherit the farm and keep it running. Now, Sheila did get married, and she had twin boys, Nicholas and Daniel. But the marriage didn't last very long, and Sheila was living by herself with the kids in London, and so she ended up moving back in with her parents. In Killer Queens, how I told you they covered this story, they talked about how Jeremy was a bad boy too and like really pushed the envelope and would do things like for shock value. Like, I don't know if he was bisexual, but he would, like, while he was out and stuff, would, like, kiss men just to get the shock value. Now, he may have been bisexual. I don't know. But, you know, because this is all happening in, like, the 80s. So, you know, that was kind of the point, was that it was like, oh my God, you know. Now, this story takes place actually right around your birthday, but it takes place in 1985. And at the beginning of that year, Sheila had actually been admitted to the hospital because she was in a psychotic episode. Now, her ex-husband was really worried about the twins, and he was trying to get full custody of them. And I just saw in like one article on The Guardian that the kids were on holiday at the farm with the grandparents and Sheila at the time of this story. But for the most part, they were living with their dad because Sheila was diagnosed with schizophrenia. And according to The Guardian, Colin, who was her ex-husband, had asked Neville, Sheila's dad, if he would talk with Sheila about, like, look, this is very distressing for the boys having to, like, see what's going on with their mother, because she also was having a lot of, like, religious delusions that was really hard for the boys. That was kind of something that was coming up that weekend. So cut to August 7th of 1985, one day before little Donna's born.
Oh, gosh.
So Jeremy Bamber at the time is 24. It's 3:30 in the morning, and he calls the Essex police because he says, hey, my dad just called me, and he said that Sheila's gone crazy with a gun.
What?
Now, some things said that the police told him to meet them there. Some things didn't say that. So I don't know if they told him to meet at the house, but they're like, okay, where we're going? And he's like, it's the White House farm. And he leaves to meet police there. It appears kind of all get there around the same time. But the police that first came didn't have guns. And so...
why would you not have a gun when he said that she, like, has had some kind of psychotic episode?
I don't know if it's because it's more of a rural area. Like, in
my... you would think that they would have a gun, though.
See, in my head, I feel like these were, like... this is completely, purely conjecture, because I don't understand this. But maybe these were, like, volunteer police?
Okay.
I truly... that is purely conjecture, because I don't know. I don't understand why you would have police that would come to help a situation, especially one that you say has a gun involved, would come that are not armed. Yeah. So because these officers didn't have guns, they would not go into the house. And so Jeremy's like, what about my family? And they're like, it's going to be okay. And he's like, but like, what about my family?
Right.
So they have to wait for the police with guns to show up. And if I remember correctly, the police with guns show up at like 5 a.m. So this is like hours later.
Yeah. Maybe they're like first responders.
I don't know. I mean, because again, this isn't America, so it's not what we're used to with police. It's also 1985, so I don't know.
Yeah. I was just thinking because, you know, we have those first responders out where I live before an ambulance can get to us. You know, like, hey, it might be a minute.
Right.
So we're going to dispatch to you, and they're just there to like, kind of help if they can.
Yeah, kind of make sure the ambulance gets there. Oh, let me go ahead and get your blood pressure taken to make sure. I'm sure they have like Narcan and stuff like that on them.
Yeah.
But they're not going to be, they can help you with chest compressions or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I feel like these officers are, but I don't know.
Right.
But it was not until 7:30 in the morning that they finally went into the house.
Wait, what?
Yes, it literally makes zero sense why they waited. Now, when the police try to go in, the back door is locked, so they have to like knock it down with a sledgehammer. And when they go inside, they see a very gruesome scene. Neville is slumped over in the kitchen with a gunshot wound to his head, and he had been shot in the shoulder and the arm. Now, also, let me say that there's a lot about this crime scene that's, like, we're not fully sure about, because you'll see later, like, there's just been some changes in what they saw, because something said that they, when they went in, they saw a woman and a man laying in the kitchen, but then it was, like, just the man laying in the kitchen later, and that she was upstairs. But the raid team allegedly heard someone moving upstairs. And so that's when they start heading upstairs, and they saw a woman collapse in the doorway. Now, that a whole part was in the New Yorker, but that's the only time I saw that about they saw a woman collapse in the doorway, et cetera, et cetera. But upstairs, they find June. She had been shot in the head, neck, chest, limbs, all the things. Now, they did have a dog, and the dog was, like, cowering, terrified under the bed.
Oh, my God, that breaks my heart.
Then across the room, they saw Sheila. The rifle was laying on her body with her fingers by the trigger, and she had a Bible laying next to her, and it was open to Psalms 51 through 55, and Save Me From Blood Guiltiness was, like, underlined in the Bible there. And then the officers proceed to the twins' room, and both of the boys were in their bed and appeared to have been killed in their sleep.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, Nicholas was still had his covers up, and Daniel was still laying asleep, like, on his side with his thumb in his mouth.
Oh, my gosh.
So, it out of anything, that is, like, the only, like, solace in this whole case, yeah, that it appears that the twins had no idea what was even going on.
Oh, my gosh, though.
There will be some stuff later with a silencer, so I can only assume that maybe a silencer was used because why didn't the boys wake up? But that's what we're hoping. It really seemed like this was just a horribly tragic murder-suicide. And that's what a lot of the police thought originally. As they're going through the crime scene, like, it seems like it's a murder-suicide. So there was this senior investigator that was, like, the original guy, DCI Thomas Jones, who went by Taff. Now, he was very on the murder-suicide train. Like, he was like, this. I mean, Sheila's got the gun, the Bible. She had a fatal gunshot wound to her throat. She had just been into the hospital for a psychotic break. The dad called Jeremy. Jeremy called police, you know, all the things. But a few days after the murders, there was a cousin named Ann Eaton, well, and a few others, that met with Taff, and they were like, you know what, Sheila, I don't know that she's capable of this. Like, they were saying that there was a significant inheritance, because that would mean that Jeremy was the sole beneficiary at this point. And we're talking in today's money, probably $1 million to $1.5 million.
Woo!
If you count, like, the land, all the things.
Yeah.
Because it said that at the time, Neville and June both left, like, 380,000 pounds and then 230,000 pounds. And then the family business was worth about 400,000 pounds.
Ooh,
so in pounds to dollars and then dollars to today's money, you know, probably like $1.5 million. So the cousins were like, ooh, I don't know. They kind of made it seem like maybe, you know, this was all for the inheritance, and that, you know, also that they felt like maybe Sheila would not have been able to handle the gun. Mm. But I'm also like, she grew up on a farm. They shot rabbits and all kinds of stuff there, because, you know, it comes out later that Jeremy had borrowed his dad's gun to go rabbit hunting and all that, like, the day before this happened. So they just are like a hunting family that, mm-hmm, I feel like she would know how to load a gun, you know?
Right.
But then there was another officer, D.S. Stan Jones, and he felt like it was not a murder-suicide. He said that Sheila had been shot twice in the throat. But, well, I mean, to quote The Guardian, that more complicated than just that, because the scene was not managed well. Because when they got there, the police took tons and tons and tons and tons of pictures. But the pictures, even in those pictures, the gun is in different positions, like, almost every picture.
What the actual fuck?
So people, like, moved the gun, and they trampled through evidence. And then not long after everything was collected, they, like, cleaned the house and burned some of the evidence.
What?
Like, rugs and all of that. So it's like, some stuff really couldn't be tested because you burned it, but also like stuff was trampled and moved that even in your own crime scene pictures, things change places.
Right.
So it's like, you know, how can you really support or deny this murder-suicide if the position of the gun keeps changing? Like, how do you know what was the original, you know? Now, as far as like the two gunshot wounds, The Guardian talks about how six different officers made statements that Sheila had one bullet to the throat. And then a doctor for the coroner's office talked about a single shot. And then later we find out that, again, the gun had been moved a few times and all of this. So it's like, could somebody accidentally have made it go off or whatever if there were really two gunshot wounds?
Right.
I don't know. And I don't know for sure if there were actually two gunshot wounds. I never saw anything that said for sure that there were.
That would totally be something that you would do if you were working like at that point and stuff. Being like, oh, well, let me just move this and so they can get a better picture of her. And then, oops, went off and be like, well, I mean, no big deal. Like, damage is already done.
Well, and then, you know, some people really had a problem with Jeremy and the way that he was grieving after this. Like, they felt like it was almost like he was masking behaviors. And, like, some stuff made it really sound like Jeremy had some mental illness, too. Like, that he was a little bit of a psychopath. I mean, can you be a little bit of a psychopath? But in that he didn't have empathy and that, like, he was just, like, putting on the show of the empathy. And then, like, when important people would go away, he would go back to being, like, totally fine, you know?
Yeah.
So people, but again, that's so hard to be, like, you know.
You're not grieving the right way.
Right, because if he was over the top, because some stuff said he was over the top. And then so it's like, so that's a problem. And then some stuff says he didn't cry enough. You know, so it's like, no one's ever going to grieve in the way that you think that they should with a trauma, you know. But the cousin that I told you about before, so after this all happened, the family went back into the house. Like, the, like, cousins and all these people went into the house pretty fucking quickly.
Wow.
And now, cousin found this window that, like, didn't close well. And she's like, this has to be how, because remember I told you the doors were locked.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, this has to be how Jeremy got out after he killed everybody.
So they think it's Jeremy,
yes,
for sure.
Yes. Okay. So the family is like, no, Jeremy did this. This is not a murder-suicide. Jeremy did this and then pretended like this happened.
Well, and the cops took so long, they couldn't even just see, like, if his car was cool or anything, you know, like, they were there so long just standing out there and stuff.
But he did arrive, like, with the cops. So that wouldn't have really, because he did kind of get there with it, but, like, he could have left, gone, because he called the police from his house.
Gotcha.
He lived, like, 4 miles away from them or something. It wasn't, like, you know, 30 minutes.
Right.
So he did call the police, but it's also, like, 1985, because there's, like, a whole thing with the silencer that the cousin says that she found later, like, in a cabinet, like, hidden, and that it looked like it had blood on it. But then it was like, there was only one silencer, but then there was actually two. And the silencer business, I'm gonna be honest, I was so fucking confused reading everything about this silencer and listening to podcasts and stuff. I'm like, what? Because this is kind of a bone of contention in this thing, because it's like, was
a
there
what?
A bone of contention?
I ain't never heard of that.
Is that a saying?
Probably. A bone up in the kitchen?
Contention. Google it. What does a bone of contention mean? A bone of contention is a subject or an issue over which there is continuing disagreement.
I didn't say it was wrong.
No, I know. I just Googled it.
It was just how okay. You said it was such.
So the silencer, like I said, a bone of contention, because it's like, I don't know. I'm like, so was there a silencer on the gun when they got there? Because then they're like, well, it couldn't have been a suicide because it's like a shotgun, basically. So she would not have been able to reach to shoot herself if the silencer was on it. So I'm like, okay, so was the silencer on the gun when y'all got there? Because if not, she could have just easily taken it off. But so there was two or there was one? So
yeah.
Did you find the silencer in the... like, it's... This is the messiest messy of cases ever.
Also was a potato.
No, it was like a legitimate silencer.
Just because they were on the farm, didn't know if they were just like, you know.
Okay. At first, like the news and everything was reporting that this was a murder-suicide. But then when that other, you know, detective kind of started joining things and then you had the cousins kind of muddying the water, then there was an ex-girlfriend that came forward, Julie Mugford. And she says, well, you know, Jeremy had actually talked to me about murdering his family for the inheritance.
What?
And so the police are like, got him. And they arrest Jeremy for the murder of his family.
Why didn't this girlfriend come out earlier?
Well, and the girlfriend's story changes a lot.
Oh, gosh.
We'll get into that. So in October of 1986, Jeremy goes to trial for 5 counts of murder. The prosecution is like, the motive is the inheritance. There is all this physical evidence, including like the rifle, the silencer had blood on it. And then, you know, just all this stuff. The defense is like, nah, Sheila did this. It's very clear. She had schizophrenia. Not that everyone with schizophrenia is violent. We know that that's actually rarely the case. But that there's evidence that, she, you know, she had just been in the hospital. She was worried about losing her kids, all this stuff, because that had been talked about that weekend. You know, all this was going on. Now, Jeremy was in custody from the moment he was arrested. And, I mean, it was like 12, like almost, a, I mean, a whole year from the time that he was arrested to the trial. Now, what happened was, when this was at trial, the jury could not make a unanimous verdict. It was 10-2. And the judge was like, you know what, actually, instead of unanimous, we'll just do a majority wins.
What?
And he was found guilty on all 5 counts of murder on a 10-2 majority verdict.
What? How is that possible?
I don't know. And so I'm like, that should have been a hung fucking jury and we redo. Yeah. So now this part was in The Guardian, I believe. So he was sentenced to a minimum of 25 years in prison. But in 1988, it was upgraded to a whole life tariff by, it said, the then Home Secretary Douglas Hurd. But Jeremy didn't know anything about that until 1994.
What?
So, y'all, this whole case is a kerfluffle.
Yeah.
It is so... Okay, now we're going to talk about some of the controversies of the case. Because this case, while it's technically solved, because Jeremy is still in prison, a lot of people don't think he should be there. He's been there for like almost 40 years and he still maintains his innocence. There are still trying appeals to get him out. There is whole ass podcast and website supporting him. It's called jeremy-bamber.co.uk. And then they have a podcast. It's literally called Jeremy Bamber and White House Farm Podcast. It's like a whole thing. So this has gone to the Criminal Case Review Commission multiple times. And as of recently, like they currently have new phone logs right now that they're supposedly reviewing. Okay, so the silencer. Basically, the prosecution says that the rifle with the silencer would have been too long for Sheila to shoot herself. And as far as the like conspiracies, controversy, let's call it controversy. There's a lot of like alleged tampering because the defense, well, one, they did not get a lot of info that we'll find out later. But also they say that the silencer wasn't on the rifle when Sheila died and that it was later reattached by the police. Because again, things are weird. Like there's missing photographs. Okay, so in the original crime scene photos, there was no silencer in those pictures until, remember, the cousin, like, found them. And then police, during the trial, gave inconsistent accounts of, again, where and when they found the silencer.
Now, could you tell if the kids were killed before all of that? Because I feel like if they were killed before, then... makes sense that she wouldn't need a silencer, you know, but if she killed everyone else
and then, right,
then killed them, then, you know what I mean?
Like, well, I think, and I don't know, because the other thing is now I heard this on Killer Queens. I didn't see that anywhere, but that the blood around Sheila was way fresher than the blood around anyone else. And we'll talk about that in a minute too. Well, not that specific thing, but why that makes sense as far as a timeline in a little bit.
Well, in my head too, I'm just thinking if, I don't know who did it, but if he did do it, it makes sense that he would have killed her last because she's his scapegoat.
Right, right, right. But basically the way her blood was in the timeline, if he would have done it, her blood would have been more like coagulated than it was. Like her body was fresher than everybody else's. And so if it had been him, they would have matched. That will make more sense in a minute. Okay. Hold that thought.
Are we going to disagree on this?
I don't think so.
Okay.
So now, remember, I'm like, where are the fucking phone logs? Because I feel like this case could be just put a fucking bow on it if we had some goddamn phone logs. Because stuff was kept from the defense as far as the phone logs. Because there is now evidence that showed that a phone call was made to 999, which is their 911, was made to 999 from inside the house after Jeremy called police from his house.
So it couldn't have been any of them.
No, meaning it was
oh, it
them.
Was.
It was a silent phone call. And there's also evidence that shows Jeremy's dad called police and said that Sheila had the gun.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, that was also kept from the defense.
But they have that in recording that he said that?
Don't know about recording. I know that it's in police record. I don't know for sure about recording. Now, like I said, there has been like poor handling of records, photos, all the stuff. Like, again, with the pictures of Sheila, there was pictures with the body, with the rifle on her body, beside her, literally next to the window. Like, things were getting changed.
Also, I wonder where the phone was then.
Right. Well, and then we find out that a lot of the police officers' original notes were either altered or, air quotes, lost. Quite a few officers changed their statements over the years on what happened, like what they saw, like how I said, they said when they came in, there was one body, and then sometimes it said it was two, and then, you know, it's like, how can you argue that? Then there was a radio log from one of the firearms officers, because remember, you have some non-firearm officers and firearm officers. So if the firearms officers are there, that means that they're all standing outside because they had been waiting on them to get there since 3:30. So a radio log from one of the firearms officers said that at 5:25, they had been speaking to someone in the house. So how are they speaking to someone in the house if Jeremy killed them all and then called police? Because then they also said that there's record that the officers saw someone walking in the window. So basically the theory is that Sheila didn't actually die by suicide until after the officers got there. And so Jeremy's defense is saying, hey, we have all this that you talked to someone in the house. So who the fuck did you talk to? There was a silent 911 call, and that the officers themselves said that they saw the windows open and shut, lights come on and off, and that, like, you literally saw someone walking while Jeremy's with you, and Jeremy's like, can we go in and try to save somebody? And they're like, oh, we don't have guns, we can't, it'll be all right. And then she dies by suicide after she had killed everybody.
Mm.
This is where I'm like, this is weird, because the original police officer was like, this is very clearly a murder-suicide. It wasn't until this other police officer came in after the family was like, hey, we went in and we found this silencer, and there was this window, and then also, you know, he had a lot to inherit. You know, maybe you should look at him. I feel like the family had a lot to gain from Jeremy being out of the picture.
Yeah.
Because then they would split the inheritance. Like, you know how you, like, you look up stuff and it'll, and like, Google will, like, guess questions for you?
Yeah.
One of them was, like, who's living in the house? And that original cousin I told you about is living in the house and has been for a long time.
Oh, fuck.
And so it's like, I'm not saying that they did anything, but they had a lot to gain with Jeremy being the sole heir mm-hmm. and being in prison for this.
Yeah.
I ain't saying they did anything wrong.
I ain't saying they're gold diggers.
But I'm saying they just had a lot to gain yeah. as well. This is my thing. It's giving me Macon a murderer. He may have done it, but there is a shit ton of conflicting evidence. I mean, not to mention they basically changed the rules, which I'm sure they literally could do. But like when they couldn't get a unanimous verdict, they were like, you know what? The 10-2 split's fine, actually. We'll
yeah,
take that.
That's
like,
wild.
Instead of making it a hung jury and let's do this again. Like, it's just, there's just too many icks for you to be able to say without a reasonable doubt he's guilty.
Well, and then I feel like since the defense didn't get all the information, then it should be like a mistrial or something.
Exactly. But now let me tell you this, though. The allegations have been reviewed in multiple appeals by the Criminal Case Review Commission. And so far, they have not ruled that tampering occurred in a way that invalidates the conviction. So basically, they also hadn't said that there wasn't tampering. They're just saying that, well, it wasn't enough to change the conviction. So it technically is still open for reviewing as new evidence emerges. And like I said, are still reviewing evidence because now they're getting a bunch from like the phone calls and stuff.
Yeah.
Now, Jeremy has been interviewed quite a lot by The Guardian. He, like, seems to work with them a lot. He says that his relatives really kind of twisted the story. He said that they told anyone who'd listen what awful parents my mom and dad were. Basically, they made the narrative that Jeremy and Sheila had a really hard childhood, and they made his mom seem like a religious zealot. That she wasn't really, and that it would like give him a reason to want to kill her, and that he's like, it wasn't like that at all.
Now, here's the thing, too. Was that shotgun that was used, was that the one that Jeremy borrowed?
Yes, but he left it in the house. So he took it out to go hunting to kill the rabbits, and then they had scurried away, so he took it back inside the house.
That he says.
Yeah, I don't know that for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I can see the argument for he did this. I definitely can. But then it feels like if all of the things about like the tampering, potential tampering with evidence, stuff being found way later, very conveniently, you know, the phone calls, the police saying that they see someone moving around while Jeremy's down here. Well, somebody's got to be alive up there unless it's their fucking ghost.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, it could have been, if it wasn't like a complete fatal shot, someone could have been like trying to get help.
Well, see, and some people are saying that that's why she had two gunshot wounds. She shot herself once, and that did they actually see her like laying downstairs, and then she ran upstairs and shot herself again. Mm-hmm. So see what I'm saying? Like, there's so many like, well, what? Like, did that happen? I don't know. And it's like, so also though, if she was up there and the police saw her moving about, how did they not hear a gunshot if that was her that called, or
yeah,
she was moving around and then she shot herself? But they say that her blood, like, she looked like she had died very recently compared to the family. You know, like, you could tell that they had been there for hours, whereas she looked, I hate to say this, but more fresh. So it's like, if she did die hours later, because they saw her walking around and all the things, you know what I mean? You wouldn't have as much, like, lividity and all that.
Yeah. I just need them to tell us how much longer, how many hours.
And we don't know.
I know, because again, he could have just waited to kill her later to be like, okay, this makes sense. Right.
And
if he went home thinking, I've done the perfect crime and have the perfect scapegoat, someone then tries to call because he's going to make his call to be like, oh no, something happened.
Yeah.
And someone's trying to call for help, but then they die.
Right, right. The silent phone call really could have been someone trying after he was out. Like, it may not prove what they're making it sound like it's proven, you know?
Yeah.
But if the dad really did call and say that Sheila was doing it.
Right. That's what I want to know. But, like, also, if there's no evidence, like, actual recorded, like, that's him saying it, I don't believe it because they've mishandled so much. But then this has come about.
But also then, is it just not coming about because they hid it from the prosecution, you know?
But, like, why is it coming out now?
That I don't know. I don't know.
I just feel like that would be easy to say, oh, yeah, he called and he said this and put it up in a file. You know, but if it was actually recorded, then okay.
That would literally be, I mean, get out of jail free card. I feel like if you had a recording of the dad saying,
yes,
Sheila is blah, blah, blah.
So that's why I'm just like, I don't know.
And it's like, then part of me too is like, damn, I mean, like, it just perpetuates that people with schizophrenia are dangerous and they aren't usually dangerous to others themselves. Yes. So I don't know. Like this was like an episode of 48 hours. You know how 48 hours, the first half, you're like, absolutely, they did it. And then the second half, you're like, did they do it? And then the third half, you're like, I just need the jury to tell me if they did this or not.
I know, right?
You know, I felt like that, but I did feel like, again, like the making of a murderer of it, in that there were some things that I was like, my biggest thing was the 10 to 2. Like, that should have been a hung jury and let's try this again.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got, like, his sentence got upped. Like, that's weird, too. Like, you could just up somebody's sentence. That's weird to me.
Yeah. The thing I hate is that the inconsistent photos and stuff, too.
Yes.
Because, again, where was the phone at? You know what I mean? Like, who had the phone? That would tell us some stuff, too. Because if it was her dad, like by her dad, okay, you know, but if it was by her and she was the last one alive being like, oh, fuck, let me try to do this. I don't know.
Well, and then too, like on Wikipedia, it was saying how the family had been shot a total of 25 times. And it's like, was Sheila capable of the loading of a gun for that many rounds? I don't know. Nothing that ever said she was like a, you know, a hunter, you know.
Right. I was going to say that, too. Just because her family grew up on a farm, you know, they hunted and all that, I could do the same thing. And I wouldn't have been that person that knew all the stuff. You know what I mean? Like,
now, I do want to say this. Back to your phone question. On Wikipedia, it said that there was no blood on the kitchen phone. But I don't know that, were there other phones? Were they, you know?
Yeah.
Because also, though, it could be argued that she was upstairs, like, committing the murders. And he ran downstairs to telephone police. And he was able to call before she shot him, you know?
Right.
Because they asked Jeremy, like, well, why did he call you? And he was like, I don't know why he called me instead of police. But then they said, ended up, he did call police, allegedly.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just very fucking weird. Because also, like, if you're like, oh my God, she's on a killing spree, I wouldn't call someone to come over who, like, what's he going to do then?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, come over to this war zone. But I don't know. That's weird. But I mean, people do weird shit. So I don't know who did it. This I could see from both sides, like, okay, you know, she was about to lose everything. Because we do see that in, God, I hate myself that I can't think of her name, but her husband was Chris something, and I think, and he was going to lose the kids, and he blew them all up.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, you think, oh my God, I'm going to lose my kids. Well, no one's going to have them but me, kind of thing. So that could have been something that triggered her. Or it could have been like, this was the perfect setup. And he was like, well, if I'm going to do it, I need to do it now.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this is like truly, while it has an answer as far as he is in prison, I don't know. I don't know. Because I feel like it's one of those things that you, when you have documentaries and books and all of that, like, we're not covering all of the evidence, you know, because you have like multiple like episodic podcasts on that and stuff. It's like, I mean, you'd literally have to be an attorney to sit here and unpack all of the evidence.
Yeah.
But it's like, you also want to do like the old adage, well, if they arrested him, they had something. But no, that's not true either. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
I mean, I literally could see it going both ways.
I have nothing but question marks in my head.
Because it seems like at every turn, someone gained something. You know, like whether it's him killing them to gain the inheritance, he truly didn't do it, but then, you know, the family was like, well, because they gained inheritance, you know, yeah. because then his mom's sister ended up getting like all of the inheritance, basically, you know, so it was like,
yeah,
I don't know. Wikipedia said he had retained like some of the shares of stuff that he had to sell off for his legal fees and all. So he wasn't like completely cut out, but like his grandma had cut him out of the will. And that's what went to his mom's sister, like all of what would be his stuff. But also those people are probably wonderful fucking people. And it just happens to be that they're getting the bulk of the inheritance now because he was shitty and killed his family, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, again, you can see both sides where it's like, no, they really were going back in the house to like clean things up and all of that. And as they're cleaning up, they're like, look at all the shit the police fucking missed.
Yeah.
You know, so it may not be like, oh, look how convenient this is. No, they may really be like, I can't believe these dum-dums missed this goddamn silencer that's in the cabinet.
Right.
How did they miss this? You know?
Yeah.
So again, I don't fucking know.
This is a head scratcher.
If you had to choose right this moment, what would you say?
Oh, God. I think I'm swayed by him being in jail, you know? Mm-hmm. So I would say him, but I can see arguments on everything, but my gut is just going more towards him.
See, and I feel that. Like, I'm like, yes. But then I'm also like, that 10-2 to me was so unfair.
Well, it's unfair, but that doesn't mean that he didn't kill
right
them.
Well, and two, and I think some stuff was saying he basically, like, he was kind of an asshole and like a playboy and all that. And then, oh, and back to his girlfriend, that he basically had cheated on the girlfriend. So they're like, is she like a scorned lover that's like pissed at him because he was a womanizer? And it, so it's like, you can't convict him because he's a shitty human being. Mm-hmm. A shitty human being does not equal a murderer. Like, he could be a philanderer, right. but that doesn't mean he's a murderer.
A philanderer.
You know, and so it's like, you can't convict him just because he's a shitty guy that,
yeah.
even if he is a psychopath that, you know, didn't, like, was masking and doing all the things with his emotions and because he was trying to hide it, that also doesn't mean he did it.
Right.
I mean, a fucking, most CEOs are psychopaths, you yeah. know? Doesn't mean they're killers.
Right. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't either.
Again, I would say it's more him, but I think that's also me just being like doing a movie in my head.
Yes.
And his would be the most like, ha ha ha, like he masterminded this whole thing.
But also, like, I think that I'm a little bit defensive of the sister because I just feel like people are so terrified of people with schizophrenia.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, again, statistically speaking, they are not going to hurt someone else.
Right. My uncle, bless his heart, like, after he died by suicide, we read his journals, and I know I've talked about that, but, like, the things he would suffer from, mm-hmm. the things he would do to himself through his delusions and stuff, but he was never like that. Outwardly.
Right. It's they are usually harmful to themselves, mm-hmm. not others. But I mean, if they were having all these conversations of, you know, the kids going to live with the dads. And I mean, the kids being there for fucking Holiday.
Right.
I mean, I just, like, they didn't live there, you know?
Right. Also, that could have been a thing, too, that he might not have, he thought, okay, this would be the perfect time. And then, oh, fuck, they're here.
I do think a silencer had to be used because there's no way that you could kill two kids in a bedroom, one after another, or two people, period, kids, adults, whatever, in a bedroom, laying side by side, and them both be sleeping.
Right.
Clearly sleeping.
Yeah.
You would have to have used the silencer.
And that's the thing, too, is like, I wish people would not worry about their job. And I know that's easy for me to say, but to be like, okay, there wasn't a silencer on the gun, but I'm the one who put it on there because we found it. It had blood on it. So I thought, oh, let me put it on there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Even if it's not right then, you know, like shit's happened, but like come out after and say this or whatever.
Yeah. But then how do you prove that in a court of law? You know?
I know, but
especially when pictures were destroyed and all yeah. that. I mean, fucking burning of evidence. Like, what in the actual fuckity fuck?
Because I could see that happening where someone's like, oh, fuck, this is a silencer. This would make more sense of the story. Let's put it on there. And then it's like, no, it wouldn't. Like, she could have killed herself.
Uh-huh.
But
you put the fucking silencer on there and now we can't prove because her arms aren't long enough.
Right. Like, so it's just like, that could have been a thing, or he really could have just been like, oh, let me hide it in here. Let me go home. I got to do this real quick. I got to do, you know, because it couldn't have been super long. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He couldn't have been like, oh, 2 hours ago, my dad called and said that blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? And he didn't know that they weren't going to go in right away. So he might have been just scrambling, trying to figure out what to do. And it's like, it'd be easier for the silencer to be in the house than like, them check out his house and like, why do you have a fucking silencer?
Right.
So I don't know.
But I'm like, do we not have like gunshot residue on hands? Like we didn't test any of that. We didn't test. I mean, I know there wasn't like DNA and stuff, but I mean.
Well, you know what? I would have rather an unsolved story than this. Like, because I don't know. Like split me straight down the middle because I literally don't know. Like a pinky further is going towards him, but that's it.
Because every argument that you say that it's him, I can have something to argue it's not him, and then vice versa.
Yeah. Well, come back next week where we're still arguing over who it is.
Well, bright side, we didn't agree, but we also didn't disagree this time.
That's true.
I did think you were going to lean more towards it wasn't him. Like I thought your pinky would be on the other side. I feel like you're like 53-47.
Well, you know I can't do math, but sure.
I feel like you're 53-47 him, and I thought you would be 53-47 not him.
Yeah. I don't know why. And like I said, it could be because he is in jail for it. And so I'm like, even though I know that that doesn't necessarily mean anything, there's innocent people in jail.
Yeah.
But it's still just like, which is why they don't let them wear their jail clothes and like their jail clothes.
Right. The jumpsuits and stuff into court. But also if the jury still was not 100% sure, and we do know for a fact they did not hear all the evidence.
Yeah.
And there were still some that was like reasonable doubt, you know?
But also that could have been me on the jury and you would have been like, Donna, just fucking answer. It's all here. And I would have been like, technically. And you'd have been like, no technicalities.
Well, y'all want to know what y'all think about these stories, because Donna's was a doozy, too. This was a whoo episode.
Mine was a love story, Carrie.
Was it really, though? Or was it a delusion?
I mean, she could have been watching Sister Act with the Akon, okay?
You tell one story about you imagining a boyfriend. Well, y'all let us know what y'all think about Donna's alleged love story and tell us what y'all think. Do you think Jeremy did this or not? I would say no right or wrong answer because we don't know either.
No.
But he is in prison for the rest of his life for this. So while there is still controversy around it, ultimately he is in prison for this. So Y'all let us know what you think. Don't forget to like, subscribe, review, all the things. And remember,
creep it real
and don't get scared.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.